Blog Talk Radio.
Good Sunday afternoon, Blog Talk Radio. We are starting live on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube on the Community Advocate Network of Michigan page if you want to view us live. We are going live right now. Good Sunday afternoon. Good Sunday afternoon, everyone. I am Deborah Mitchell, your host, as usual, and welcome to another episode of Coffee and Conversation. We are talking about the Black vote today, and this is in a critical election year, and there's a lot that we need to talk about. I'm going to be going back and forth with my notes, because I have a lot of information to share with you guys this morning. Actually, I have the sneaky suspicion that we won't finish it all today. I'm probably going to have to do this thing in two parts because we always talk about how important the history piece of anything is. You know, we have to understand the cyclical nature of history, and we do that because we want to, because it informs us of the present and the future. That's the short for long of it. And so I'm going to go through a lot of the historical context and give you some background information and things like that. And hopefully, you know, when we come out of this today, we'll have a better understanding of some of the things that have happened in the past to shape what is happening today. And I know that I won't get through all of the information because it's too much. But we have a lot of stuff to look at. Let me go ahead and invite you guys to subscribe to the YouTube channel. My website information scrolling. That's the website information. If you need services or community resources, especially those that are of low income households, and what's going on with the hair today? Okay, those that are in low-income households or you know someone or you service or work with during human services and things like that, and you have clients that need information for housing, food, clothing, rent assistance, foreclosure prevention program, legal aid, and then, of course, I always have information there for our returning citizens, that are coming out of MDOC for employment and other resources, social service benefits, and things like that. In fact, Michigan just, you know, we are giving our returning citizens the right to vote here now. I think we're one of 16 states. I was just looking at that information. I don't have it all today, but people who, there are organizations who are helping those coming out of prison get their proper identification, because we've got all of these barriers being laid out, voter suppression stuff going on with these restrictive ID laws and all of this other kind of stuff that are locking people out of the democratic process. And so we want to make sure that everybody has that information. So people that are coming out of prison, you can vote in Michigan on while you're on parole and probation now. That's the bottom line. That's the part that we need to know. So I'm going to try and get that information actually up on the website, because I have a whole section that's dedicated to our returning citizens. So that's that. I was talking about the subscription thing. So I want to invite everybody to go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube channel. And, you know, this is how I am able to maintain the platform and offset some of the costs associated with doing this. You know, if you enjoy an environment of learning and intellectual discourse, or if you're just a concerned citizen, you know, go ahead and subscribe to the channel. And in fact, I'm starting to share information or things on YouTube that will not be available on Facebook. So you need to know that as well. Let me see. Hi, let's see, who's here? Okay, someone is asking the question, why vote? Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the things. And let me say this, because, you know, I think that the more that, you know, we're growing. So I think that, you know, before, I don't know if the question is a legitimate question or if it's trolling, but before we even get started with that, let me say this. Voting is a privilege that is available to every citizen in this country, but it is your own personal choice as to whether or not you want to exercise it. Our discussion today, and please understand this, is to inform us as to things that have happened in the past, in history, that have prevented us from voting, and things like that, and looking at some of the things that are happening today to suppress the vote and things like that. Everyone has to make their own decision about what privileges they choose to take advantage of, and I'll say this: if you're not careful, they'll make the decision for you. Because believe it or not, the voting rights are absolutely under attack. We just buried John Lewis. John Lewis left here fighting again for voting rights to be properly restored. And even in restoring the legislation itself, there's still discriminatory practices that's going on from state to state. Look at Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell shut down all of the polling places in Kentucky for their primary election just recently, and you know, trying to suppress the vote. So, you know, why vote? The person that is asking that question, you stick around and see what information is provided here today, and you make that decision for yourself if you're going to vote or not. Nobody can make you vote. However, please understand that it is a privilege. It is not a right. Voting rights are renewed every, well, it used to be every 10 years. Now, this last time, they made it, they extended it for 25 years. But that was just done, I think, in 2007, something like that. So, you know, there you go. That's my answer for now. So again, we're taking a look at the voting rights and specifically the black vote, and we're looking at the intersections of government and the political process and voting rights legislation and all of that stuff, and you know, and how they interact, which makes it all more important that we as black people, those of us who are African American, it makes it more important that we participate in the democratic process, this wonderful idea that we call voting. So, you know, and again, you know, as I was saying before, you know, this is what looking at history, you know, informs us of, you know, the present and the future. You know, what we know about history is that it repeats itself. And so that's why they say if you don't know the past, you're doomed to repeat it, because it's a cyclical nature to history. And so that's what we want to try and look at today. And also, I thought it would be fitting in terms of the topic of voting rights, and particularly the black vote, because we just crossed several milestones this year. One is, well, first of all, we're embarking on a major critical election, presidential election this year here in Michigan. Our primary start on Tuesday, I believe, August the 4th. So that's going to be starting. But we have the presidential election on November the 3rd. When I say milestones, I'm talking about the 56th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. This act was a milestone because this is what outlawed discrimination on the basis of race, color, sex, religion, national origin, or whatever. And this is important. Why? Because this was a huge step forward in our country, recognizing the need for equity and justice. And the problem is that it also reminds us of the fact that our nation desperately needs to make good on its promises. And that's one of the things that Martin Luther King talked about when he said to America, be true to what you put on paper, because we have yet to fully grant citizenship to black people and in this country. So that's a major problem. I mean, they gave us the right to vote. Technically, we've had the right to vote since the 15th Amendment. But in reality, that's what was put on paper. But in practice, we have a problem with our ability to express that right to vote, because that is always taken away from us. And then, of course, you have the great Frederick Douglass, who says that power concedes nothing without a demand. So when we look at things like the Black Lives Matter movement and things like that, we understand a little better the aggressive nature of the movement, or some of the aggressive aspects of the movement, let me say. We've talked about that on this channel, and, you know, one thing that I am shy about is the fact that I support that movement, period. It is an absolute righteous movement. We don't necessarily agree with all of the tactics and some of the things that are going on, but we also understand all of the factors that are contributing to a lot of the things that we don't agree with that are going on. And so, but there has to be a demand placed on society for society to change. That's why we have what we, throughout history, what we call Reconstruction, we've had two, back in the 1800s with the Civil War. Then we had the Civil Rights Movement, and now here we are again in a third Reconstruction for the same reason. So that tells us what? That tells us that people either don't know, we don't know our history as we should as a nation, or things have not been put in place. Hi, Shirley, I see you. Things have not been put in place to properly secure the rights and the citizenship of certain groups, namely Black people. So we're going to take a look at that, and you all excuse me today because, like I said, I've got so much information today that it is absolutely, I was looking through my notes, it is absolutely no way I'm going to get through all of this. But okay, so let's talk about the milestones and why I decided to do this topic today. And like I said, we just had the 56th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Then we lost several civil rights legends, John Lewis, C.T. Vivian, Joseph Lowery, who died in March, and Medgar Evers' brother. We also lost him on July the 22nd. It didn't get any press too much. Some of the Black Institute that are dedicated to African American history, of course, made their announcements. But I'm trying to see. Okay, but it didn't make the national news. But Medgar Evers, again, another civil rights icon. His brother died at the thank God the ripe old age of 97. He died on July the 22nd. Reverend Joseph Lowery died in March this year, and we've had C.T. Vivian and John Lewis that we lost on July the 17th. And this is significant because these were the champions of voting rights legislation. They were, of course, championing the cause of civil rights in general, but in particular, they were concerned with the franchise, the vote. And that, there's a reason why the most bloodiest, fiercest fights that we have had and continue to have in this country is over the franchise, because In this country, and if you don't understand anything else I say today, I want to make sure that you all understand and remember this part. In this country, citizenship is attached to your ability to vote. That is what makes you a citizen. If you're an illegal alien, they'll ask you. Sometimes they won't ask you what your nationality is. They'll ask you on various applications, jobs, credit, housing, whatever. Do you have the right to vote? The reason why they do that is because they know that if you, whatever your answer is, that is how they determine whether or not you are a legal citizen of the United States. That's why we punish people who go to prison by taking away their right to vote. We take away, essentially, their citizenship. And there are organizations and advocates and things like that that are advocating for that to change. And like I said at the beginning, Michigan has already done, you know, we're in the process of quite a bit of criminal justice reform. And so those rights have been actually restored to those who live in Michigan and about 16 other states, 15 other states. I think we're number 16. But at large in this country, once you go to prison, you can't vote anymore. So this is very important. This is very, see, your Martin Luther King and your John Lewis and your C.T. Vivian and Malcolm X and Stokely Carmichael and all of those guys, the reason why we honor them is because they understood the power of the vote, period. If for nothing else. If they didn't teach us anything else, they made us aware of the vote. Okay? So that is something that we need to continue to talk about this, because we have this sense of apathy that we have in the Black community, we've got to get over it. We have got to get over it. The 2016 election, Donald Trump won in 2016, and like I said last week, the polls were showing Hillary was winning by a landslide. It was a total farce. You know, he won. But the thing about it is that you had large segments of the African-American community, not just here, all over the country, that did not show up to vote, probably because they were listening to those calls. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I don't think that was all the only reason, but that could have been part of it, you know. No, we don't elect presidents by the popular vote. We elect them by the electoral vote. However, votes are still counted to make up the electorate. And so the vote is still important. And what we're going to look at today, is going to help us understand that. And, you know, because, you know, even with, you know, we do all of these drives and stuff like that. You know, we've heard different campaigns, and they talk about take your souls to the polls and all of these types of campaigns that people do, Puff Daddy and all kinds of people go out of their way to get the Black community out to vote. And we did show up for President Obama. And that's what's going to need to happen again, because there is so much going on in that White House and in Congress that it's unbelievable. I mean, you can't even, you know, sometimes because you can't keep up with it all. It's too much. But, you know, people are doing all kinds of things and trickery, because the goal is, in terms of the Republican Party, let me say this. And I know, you know, my newer viewers may not all disagree with me. I think most of my regular viewers will. Hi, Pastor Brown. I see you. Thank you for coming. But listen, in terms of the Republican Party, they understand the importance of the Black vote. They also understand that Black people are disproportionately loyal to the Democratic Party, and we'll get into that. So they rather get rid of our vote, period, than risk us voting and giving the advantage to the Democrats. They rather us not vote at all. That's the goal, you know. Because Black people are not monolithic, you know. We definitely have a growing number of Black conservatives. But those are typically the highly educated, the high income people, upper to middle class Black people who are generally more conservative. Vote typically for the Republican Party. And there are some, but again, you know, black people at large are still loyal, pretty much overall loyal to the Democratic Party. But in that, if you break off that sector of the population, because it's not that many, we only like 14% of U.S. population anyway, and then you break it off into the small portion of small segment of our population that are middle to upper class who would be possibly conservative in terms of their political ideology. It's not that many. So if you take that and you look at the few of them who may be still liberal, it's not enough to worry about to let them just go ahead. But the majority of the black voters being disenfranchised and suppressed, because it's to their advantage that we not vote at all. Trump is closing down, no, I'm sorry, not closing them down, defunding the post office. Thank God they got the money, because he doesn't want the mail-in voting. Why? Because the majority of black people will use it. So this is a very, 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 very important discussion that we are having today. And I hope that I am able to give you all some good nuggets, because I'm looking at this thing and I'm saying, wow. Did y'all see who anybody been on social media today? Jesus is trending. I thought that was funny when I got up this morning. I said, oh, Jesus is trending. And, you know, it's funny. I said, well, that's confirmation. I need to have this conversation today. You know, we're going to need them for this election. So, but anyway, that's a little sidebar. So I want to look at the history of voting rights. And this is important, because I want to go back and look at this. Because technically, you know, like I said, we didn't get the right to vote until the 15th Amendment, which was 1870. I think it was ratified February 3rd, 1870. So now watch this, because that's why some black scholars say that there's two constitutions, the original one, and then you have the Reconstruction Amendments, which was the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, where black people, the rights and citizenship of black people were clearly and specifically defined, and our civil rights as well. So I want to look at this history, and I'm going to go back and forth with my notes and things like that. Hold on a second. Pastor Brown is saying something. It is true that they don't want us to vote, but I'm also questioning our loyalty to the Democratic Party. Yeah, absolutely. You know, there is a huge, and we're going to talk about this too. It's so much. Have you heard of the Walk Away movement or Blexit? Have you heard of Blexit? You know, see, again, this is what I'm saying about the Black Lives Matter movement. What I like about it, and what is the most important thing to me, see, because I'm not caught up in that burning down, looting, and all of that stuff. Some other little crazy stuff has happened. One of the protesters got killed in Seattle, I think, last weekend. But I'm not caught up in all of that craziness, because I don't believe that the legitimate protesters are even involved in that stuff. That's your opportunists and all of that kind of stuff, and folks that have infiltrated those protests. So, but at any rate, they are putting demands on both parts, because remember, Pastor Brown, remember what Malcolm X said this. Malcolm X said, there is no political party. You have two types of people, conservatives and liberals. That's it. And where we make a mistake at is that one of the problems that we have in the black community is that we are loyal to a party, but the party is not monolithic. We don't understand the political spectrum. A lot of us don't understand the political spectrum, because the fact is that there are liberals and conservatives in both parties. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to deal with that and talk about the Dixiecrats and all of that stuff, because what it would happen and how the Democratic Party split. We're going to deal with that today, because today we call them neoliberals, like and neoconservatives. The neoliberals is where you get the Obamas and the Clintons and all of that stuff, and folks talk about what Obama did. It's so funny because people talk about what Obama didn't do for black people, and then we praise Clinton for what he did do for black people, and it's all screwed up because Clinton put stuff in place that hurt us, whereas Obama kind of did the hands-off approach. Clinton literally put stuff in motion that hurt us. And I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what we are paying attention to, because the fact is that Obama wasn't put in office for black people. He's a conservative liberal. He is of that conservative wing of the Democratic Party, neoliberal. And until we understand all of those little nuances, and things are getting better because, you know, we got social media and, you know, we got, you know, and these types of things. And so people are getting, you know, we waking up. We're getting woke, Shirley. Shirley always say stay woke. Our allegiance to the Democratic Party, Pastor Brown, in short of it, is a problem. It's a major problem because our vote is not doing anything for black people. That's why you see all this symbolic stuff. Is even now you have to watch it. Because see, that's why I was looking at Twitter, and they were trending, and it trends quite often. Vote blue no matter who, because the fact is that we're gonna, even once we get Trump out of office, we have to turn around and fight Biden on certain things. So we're gonna have to watch it. You know, we're gonna have to watch it and not have this blind loyalty. Let's see. Clinton wanted to appear tough on crime, which means tough on black. Exactly. Then look at what he did with the TANF program, welfare reform. That's where these so-called activation laws came from, where people had to work to keep their food stamps. These single mothers, they had to get a job. And at that time, the economy was so bad, there were no jobs. So people were getting kicked off, and the child poverty rate skyrocketed under Clinton. You know, he also put that piece in the welfare reform about they made some positive changes from the AFDC program in terms of assets, them being able to have assets and things like that. I think they allowed them to have $1,000 worth of assets. That's still in place. And things like that. But, and then that's where all the black men are so jammed up with child support cases. That came from Clinton's welfare reform legislation. The Perora Act, the personal responsibility,
I'll tell you, wait a minute. I'll tell you in 1 second.
Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act that of 1996 that Clinton did. That's where why all of these black guys are jammed up with these child support cases now. That was a Clinton thing. So, but anyway, so let's look at this thing in terms of the history of the voting rights, because the first Voting Rights Act was done in 1866. That was done by Lincoln. And, you know, we had, because you got to remember now, during this time that you had the Reconstruction, the first Reconstruction. The Civil War was going on. The Civil War lasted from 1860, a little over 12 years, actually, the Civil War, 1865 to 1877. And it was called Reconstruction because that's when Lincoln had started his plan to reconstruct the Confederate South. That's when he did the Emancipation Proclamation and all of that stuff, and where he abolished slavery in 1863. So I think it was 11, the Confederate South was made up of 11 states. They had left the Union and all of that stuff. And the Confederate soldiers, they fought the North because you had in the North you had more people were evolving more so in the North in terms of they opposed slavery. They were becoming opponents to slavery, and that is actually what split the Democratic Party, because you had the Dixiecrats down South. And then, you know, just the regular old, you know, liberals up North. But that's how the Democratic Party got split. And what happened is that those who ascribed to abolishing slavery rallied around the Republican Party, you know, at that time. Abolition of slavery in 1865. Well, the Emancipation Proclamation was written in 1863. The 13th Amendment, I believe, was written in 1865. Hold on a second. The Civil War started 1865 to 1867. That was the Civil War. Then the 1866 Civil Rights Act. That was during the Johnson era. No, that's not what I want. Hold on. 13th Amendment was done in 1865. December the 6th, 1865, that's when slavery was abolished and they made it illegal to own slaves and they abolished involuntary servitude, of course, which is just slavery. But there was a whole issue with that because, remember, again, Lincoln had already wrote the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, right? So what happened? Because they had to turn around and come back with the 13th Amendment to support the Civil Rights Act, the Emancipation Proclamation. No, okay, he did the, to support it in 1865 is when they came back with the 13th Amendment. Okay. So let's go back for a second. Let's go back for a second, because I don't want to get ahead of myself, because I'll get confused because it's so much information. Okay. So we were talking about the first Reconstruction. So of course, so you had the Civil War going on. This is for 12 years, 1865 to 1877. This was the first Reconstruction, and it involved, you know, all of your southern, 11 Southern. This is where the Confederates this is where the, I'm sorry, the Southern, those 11 states had left the Union. And so, because, again, like I said, you know, for folks in the North was getting away from, they didn't want the slavery anymore. So you had a President Lincoln who, you know, essentially abolished slavery, you know, ostensibly, you know, supposedly, you know, that, and, you know, but they ended up having to keep going back and forth. They did the 13th Amendment. They did the 14th Amendment. They did the 15th Amendment. And they had to keep coming back and redefining. First, they abolished slavery and all of that. Then they came back and which supposedly gave us citizenship then. But then they had to come back and define citizenship in the 14th Amendment. Then the 15th Amendment had to come back and expand the definition of citizenship. And this is an important word. This, remember, you know, citizen, remember that word. That word citizen is the important, that's the trigger button right there. So and then, you know, you had Juneteenth. Juneteenth came out of the fact that, you know, those folks down in Texas didn't know that they didn't know anything about the Emancipation Proclamation. We all know about that. He said, bravo, Dad. Next president needs to be read in, let's see. Emancipation Proclamation used to be read in detail. Yeah, but I, you know what? I got so much information. Are you saying me? I need to read it today? I got so much information, Pastor Brown. Listen, I'm telling you, my head is about to explode. So we're, and I'm going to have to do this in two parts because there's no way that I can get through all of it today. But, okay, so Juneteenth, you know, we know about all of that. Slaves were freed in 1863. 2.5 years later, the folks down in Texas were still on the plantation working, you know. And that's how, where Juneteenth comes from, you know, because they didn't get the memo that they was free. So, but anyway, let's keep going. Okay. So Lincoln, and you know, there's all of these questions about why Lincoln freed the slaves. A lot of black folks was raised to believe that Lincoln freed the slaves because he was out of the goodness of his heart. And then we found out a little better that it was not economically sound to maintain slavery in this country anymore, and all of that. And you know, but I still have some questions because there are some things that happened before that led up to that 1863 that makes me have even more questions, and that's going to require some study on my part to look into why, exactly why, what his motivations were, pure motivations were to release the slaves. But anyway, so of course you had the South who wanted to hold on to their slaves. So they refused to join the Union. This is when they were developing the United States of America. So that was one thing. And then, you know, of course, the North and the South fought, and that's where your Confederate Army came from. And, you know, and we talked about this, too, a few weeks back when we were talking about the Confederate monuments and the Black Lives Matter movement forcing their hand in taking down all of these monuments because, and don't confuse them with the Union soldiers like the caller that called into the show a few weeks back. He was trying to tell me that black people fought for the Confederates. And, you know, I don't know. I said, well, let me give them the benefit of the doubt because I might be wrong. This is not stuff that I read up on every day. But that is a myth. And everything that I looked at since we had that program a few weeks back says that that is a myth. And if they did fight for the Confederates, it was forced. It was forced. So, you know, so that's where the Confederates came from because, you know, your Robert E. Lee's and Stonewall Jackson and all of those guys that they, you know, because they were traitors. They were traitors. The country was evolving like what you're seeing now. People no longer wanted, you know, particularly the North, no longer wanted slavery. They were trying to unite the country. And, you know, they rebelled. The South rebelled. And that's where the Confederates come from. So, again, you know, why are we honoring them? There's absolutely no reason except to maintain white supremacy. But we've already talked about that. The idea of white supremacy anyway. But we've already talked about that. Those who want to look at it or listen to some of that history can go back. I forget the name of the video. What was the name of that? Anyway, because we talked about the other things, Aunt Jemima and all of that stuff. So, okay. So, and then they, you know, they try to come up with this lie talking about that, you know, with the Confederate flag and all of that, that it represents Southern pride, but that's crazy. You know, because, I mean, if you ride up to the Upper Peninsula here in Michigan, we in the Midwest, that flag is swinging everywhere. So, I mean, you know, anyway. Move on from that. So I want to show you guys something. I want to show you guys this. So, okay, so now you got the Civil War. Let's backtrack. You got the Civil War going on for 12 years, from December 1865 to March 1877. But in the middle of that, they wrote the Civil Rights Act of 1866. Now, this was written by Congress. Because by then they had killed Lincoln. He was assassinated in April of 1865. And Andrew Johnson was now the president. So check out how this all of this went down. So in the middle of the Civil War, Congress writes the Civil Rights Act of 1866. Now, they had to go back and forth with President Johnson because he kept vetoing. They had to pass this bill twice to put it in the law and just override, you know, the two-thirds vote. Just they overrode his veto and decided, some of the congressmen got together and decided that it was law because he kept fighting them on it, you know. But, again, he was a, you know, he was a proponent of slavery. So, okay, so they, again, Emancipation Proclamation, 1863, they killed Lincoln in April of 65. The Civil War started in December of 1865. Then Congress passes the Civil Rights Act of 1866. This was the first Civil Rights Act. The Civil Rights Act that King and all of them did was 1964, okay? I know that the majority of people know this, but I want to make sure that everybody understands the timeline on this thing. So you got Andrew Johnson. Andrew Johnson is president. He keeps vetoing the bill. So they finally get it through in April of 1866 to support the 13th Amendment. He vetoed it again. They kept going back and forth. And then, you know, it finally got passed. So, again, this was the first federal law to define citizenship and affirm the equal protection of all citizens under the law. So then, okay. Then you have the 14th Amendment, which was adopted in 1868. This is where they had to expand the definition of citizenship by specifying rights and, you know, and all of that stuff. And this was in response to issues related to former slaves following the Civil War. If you go back and look at or read up on the 14th Amendment, it talks about how ultimately, you know, the defeated Confederate South, they bitterly fought against this 14th Amendment. They bitterly fought against all of it, the whole idea of releasing slaves. But this, you know, they had to threaten them. They had to threaten not to give them back. Because, see, remember now, when they left the Union, when they refused to join the Union, they lost their representation in Congress. And the only way that they got them, the South, to agree to the 14th Amendment was to threaten not to give them their congressional representation back. So they had to force their hand to get them to agree to it. And the 14th Amendment covers a lot because you got this is like a foundational, like a landmark piece of legislation because Brown versus Board of Education in 1954 was argued, used this law as they argued this law for that. Roe versus Wade in 1973 for abortion rights, and we still fight for women's reproductive rights. That's a whole nother conversation. Now we call it Me Too. It's Me Too now, but it ain't nothing but the women's suffrage. Let me see. I appreciate the information. Thank you, Pastor Brown. I want to go through it like kind of step by step and make sure that because it's very, very important that we are able to disseminate or articulate this history. And I don't know if you were in here at the very beginning and I was talking about the cyclical nature of history because history only repeats itself. If we don't know it, it'll happen again. All you have to do is look back, you know, you want to figure out what's going on today, look at the past. The past informs the present and the future. So anyway, okay. So I was talking about the 14th Amendment. Okay, so this was landmark because you had Brown versus Board of Education use this law, Roe versus Wade. And what was the, even the 2000 election, the Bush versus Gore election, this 14th Amendment was a masterpiece of legislation. You know, for the Junior Bush, when they stole that election down there in Florida. But so it covers a lot. It's a very extensive piece of legislation. And here's what's interesting about it, because remember we were talking I've mentioned it a few times. I'm always bringing up that Dred Scott case, the Dred Scott versus Sanford case, that Supreme Court ruling that said the black man has no right that the white man is bound to respect. That is a famous Supreme Court ruling. And I want to give you some perspective when we talk about voting and talk about the history of that ruling just to give you some background. So we got the 14th Amendment and we got the Dred Scott case. So the 14th Amendment was going on in 1868. But prior to that, we had the Dred Scott case that happened in 1857. Dred Scott was the black guy who had lived up in Chicago, up in Illinois, somewhere up in the Wisconsin Territory, and he had been free for 4 years because it was illegal in that area to own slaves. Well, what it was is that any slave owner that wanted to reside in that territory for an extended period of time, gave up their right to own slaves because they didn't believe in slavery up there. So that don't mean that they weren't racist. They just didn't believe in owning people. So, but anyway, the thing is that Dred Scott, this black man, had to sue all the way up to the Supreme Court because what happened is that he had been living in Chicago. I can't remember if the man had he must have previously owned him before they moved to Chicago. Then they were there for 4 years, and of course he was considered a free man, was able to walk around like he traveled, whatever he wanted to do, because he was a freedman in the Illinois area, a state. Then his owner / boss got transferred, because he was in the Army, he got transferred back to somewhere down Emerson, Mississippi, I think it was, and when he went back down to Mississippi, of course, Mr. Scott went with him because he worked for him, but Mr. Scott found himself back in slavery again. And this is interesting because he could have made a declaration for freedom while he was up in Illinois, but, of course, he probably didn't know about it or couldn't read or whatever the case may be. But regardless, he, of course, then became his owner boss, his boss's slave again. And he said no. He was, so he offered his boss $300 to get free, to buy his freedom, and he was also trying to buy freedom for his wife and his children, and the boss refused it, So that's how he ended up in court. And he started at the lower courts, and he had won, but then he didn't win. I'm sorry, but he started in the lower court, and he ended up appealing to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, that's when this judge, what is his name? Keisha, hi. That's so true. Hold on a second. My friend Keisha is here. That's so true. We must educate our own. Absolutely. We got to get this thing together, honey, because it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I'm not speaking that into existence, those of us who are spiritual people. I'm saying anytime, if you look at history, every time there is a reconstruction, what does reconstruction mean? It's being reconstructed. Society is being reconstructed. It's being put back together. Our value systems are changing. And that is what we see going on today. But every time it happens, it's a war. I'm not talking about fight as in pencil and paper, just going back and forth with legislation. People literally took to the streets to maintain their way of life. That's what happened. Unless God intervened, that's probably what's going to happen again. And that's why we're looking at this. We're also looking at this because we're in the middle of a critical election. We got to figure this thing out. Keisha is saying it's inevitable. I think so. That's what, we were talking, Keisha, we've been looking at the black militias and all of that stuff. I wish Nikki was here. Let's see, what is she saying? It's time we have a seat at the table. Absolutely. Absolutely. This stuff, we've been talking about cancel culture as well, and I put up a little short video clip on YouTube, and it says how racism got canceled. Talking about cancel culture. Because these kids are over it. They tired, You got white people that are tired of it, and that has always been the case. We've always had white allies, and this is what I'm talking about. Back all the way back to the 1800s, the whole northern part of this country wanted to get rid of slavery. That's how the Civil War started. That's how the Democratic Party got split. Because you had a whole segment of our population that wanted it out. They wanted to rid the country of that. So this is what we're looking at. So y'all follow me. Follow me good. So Dred Scott goes to the Supreme Court. This judge, what is his name? Chief Justice Roger B. Taney. Now, let me tell you about Judge Taney, this Supreme Court justice. He was a staunch slave supporter. So you got to look at this ruling now. The ruling said the black man has no right, and the white man is bound to respect, especially for his economic benefit. That's what the end piece of that ruling. We always say the first part, but the end, there's the full sentence talks about the economic benefit to the white man, and which is what happened between him and his boss, because apparently he was satisfied with his boss up until they got back to Mississippi, and he found out he was the man's slave again, and he tried to buy his freedom from the man, and the man said no. Why? Because it was economically beneficial to him to have him as a slave. It's free labor. And there was nothing anybody could do about it, because why? The ruling was based on the fact, the ruling was based on the fact that Dred Scott, a black man, was not a citizen and had no right to sue in the court, American justice court system. Now, we already had the first Constitution, but the Supreme Court said he wasn't a citizen. We can't help you. You're not a citizen of this country. You don't have a right to sue in our court. Right? Okay. So this judge, again, he was a proponent of slavery. At that time, 9 of the Supreme Court justices were appointed by proponents of slavery. 5 of the Supreme Court justices, and they weren't just proponents of slavery. Five of them were from the South. So let me repeat that, because I didn't say that right. 9 of the Supreme Court justices at that time were appointed by presidents from the South who were proponents of slavery. 5, and probably owned slaves themselves. 5 of the Supreme Court justices came from families who owned slaves. Are y'all seeing the correlation here when we talk about voting? We got primary elections starting Tuesday. What is Shirley saying? He was an American. Not according to the Supreme Court. They said, you are not a citizen. You can't sue here. That was the whole problem. And see, we don't want to vote. But listen, we got primary election start, what, Tuesday, Shirley, August the 4th. This is where we vote for the judges and all of that stuff. 200, I thought it was 160. Pastor Brown made me realize a couple weeks ago that Trump has already appointed 200 federal judges. That's done already. Then I was listening to Dr. Carr and all of them, and they were talking about Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell's whole mission is to appoint Supreme Court justices and do voter suppression tactics. That's what he's there for. Let's see. Tuesday, yes. August the 4th. I just got my absentee ballot thing in the mail, too. I ordered that thing 2-3 months ago. That's what I'm talking about. We got to get that stuff now. Order that stuff now. Yeah. Trump has already appointed 200 federal judges. If they are able to stay in there, they're going to fill up them. Listen, if they pull that off, all the marching and the protesting in the world is not going to make no difference, because guess what? Those federal judges will shape this society for hundreds of years to come, because they'll be in there, and they young guys, too. And I'm going to talk about those white evangelicals. Hold on. That ruling helped set the tone for us being mistreated as a people after chattel slavery. Absolutely. That Dred Scott versus Sanford Supreme Court ruling in 1856, listen, that started your Jim Crow laws and all of that. Even though this was all the way down in the 1950s, that Dred Scott court battle itself went on for 11 years. It didn't get old. He still lost the case after he fought it for 11 years. It didn't get over. It had to be overturned by the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. And then the sons, I guess the father probably died that owned him, and the sons ended up bought him from the father or whatever, and set him free, gave him his freedom. And then he died 9 months later, if I remember correctly, Dred Scott. But that ruling set the tone for your Jim Crow laws and everything. That's what I'm saying. See, we can't talk about, we're confused because freedom in terms of us being a free people as black people is on paper, but the discriminatory practices and all of that stuff is still going on. McConnell set in place those federal judges to ensure a grip on power. Absolutely, because the Supreme Court shapes society. That's why there's the Supreme Court. They are the third arm of the legislative branch. You got the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. Executive is the president, legislative is Congress, the judicial is Supreme Court. Those are the three branches of government. Shirley, what is Shirley saying? Dred Scott born in Southampton County, Virginia. Okay, I'm not sure where he was born at, but I know when he was free for 4 years, he was living with his owner up in Illinois somewhere. And then they went back to Mississippi. The Army transferred his owner, his boss, back to Mississippi. That's how he ended up for his freedom, you know. So, okay, so let's keep going. Because I want to point out a couple of things here. Where did I put it? Okay, so I want to point out a couple of things, because the first thing we need to, you know, lock in on the fact that this ruling was based on the fact that he was not a citizen and had no right to sue in court. It also nullifies that Missouri Compromise. The Missouri Compromise is the law which is what made slavery illegal up north anyway. When they did the Dred Scott ruling, that nullified that Mississippi Compromise and made it they deemed it unconstitutional, right? So this is what gets the party started with this presidential election of Abraham Lincoln in 1860. Dred Scott was going on in 1857. You got a presidential election that comes up in 1860 where Abraham Lincoln was the Republican candidate. So check this out. Watch this. Watch them. So this is what happened. You got Abraham Lincoln running for president in 1860, but this Dred Scott ruling, now, of course, the South was elated because they can, you know, they keep going business as usual. We still own slaves. Everything's good. The North was infuriated. They were outraged. And so when this election came up, now, well, the Civil War didn't start in 1865, but see, that ruling, the whole issue of slavery is what split the Democratic Party. See? So that's what I was saying earlier when Malcolm X talked about there are no political parties. There's only two types of people, liberals and conservatives, because when you talk about the, you know, if we just use the Democratic Party as an example, you had just Southerners that were the Dixiecrats, and then you had the Northern Democrats. You know, two different political ideologies, and so same party. And the same exists for, it's so many factions in that Republican Party. You got the Tea Party wing, you got the neoconservatives, the conservatives, Jesus Christ. Political spectrum. You got all kind of stuff, Green Party. It's all kinds of stuff. It's all kinds of stuff. So let's look at this. Okay, so Dred Scott ruling, the South is happy, the North is outraged. Then, what happened? Oh, the Republican Party, the presidential election in 1860. And see, this is when, you know, when Lincoln won, that's when they became known, the party of Lincoln, the Republican Party, because they were at that time the liberals. But regardless, that Dred Scott ruling sealed the deal for Lincoln to get in, because the country was changing. The country was evolving, and an increasing number of people were opposing slavery. You know, they didn't want slavery anymore. That's how Lincoln won. That's how Lincoln got in, because of that Dred Scott ruling. You know, it was all over the issue of slavery and these Northern and Southern factions of the Democratic Party. That was it. Ultimately, that's when Lincoln got in. His election precipitated the withdrawal of the 11 Southern states from the Union and started the Civil War. So that's why I said at the beginning of the program today, talking about Lincoln's ultimate motivation for freeing the slaves in 1863. Like I said, some people believe that it was, you know, he was being a good person, a good man, or whatever. And some people believe that it was for economic reasons. But as I look more into this thing and look at the Dred Scott case and its effect on that 1860 presidential election, I'm thinking they didn't like Lincoln in the first place, because he was part of the Republican liberals who were trying to abolish slavery before he even got in. Oh, that's the same comment. That was trying to abolish slavery even before he got in. Now, that's what I think. I'm not sure. I have to look into that to make a definitive conclusion about that. But I think that he was on the hit list in the first place long before he was assassinated. But this Dred Scott case reminds us of the importance of voting, and that's what I want to talk about, too, because the judges, the local and federal representatives, is where we have the most control. Because, you know, if you think about it, whoever's running for president is already chosen for us anyway with this two-party system. You know, whoever is running is already nominated or selected by each party. And then we get to choose between the two. So technically, they've already chosen the president. They just give us them two options and, you know, pick one. But with the judges and the district attorneys and the attorney generals and Congress, our local and federal representatives, we have the most control. My dog is getting on my nerves. That's what we have the most control because, you know, we literally, well, based on who's running, but we literally get to choose. But this is very important. This is very, very important. Very important, you know, because, again, the Supreme Court structures society. They are responsible for the structure of our society. Those rulings mean everything. And then let me say this about voting. There is a reason why some of the most bloodiest and deadliest battles are fought over the franchise. I said this at the top of the program. I can't remember. Because in this country, your citizenship is attached to your ability to vote. That is what determines whether or not you're a citizen in America. And we have yet to give black people full American citizenship. It's on paper. But, you know, we have been given citizenship from the, you know, from the legal standpoint. The problem is our ability to, you know, exercise those rights. Martin Luther King, John Lewis, D.C. Vivian, you know, they understood this. And remember now, this is, you know, back in the 1800s, this was long before King them came along and started the, you know, 1900s, the 50s and 20th century. There were people who were fighting for our rights even back then, and I imagine they were probably white because, you know, slavery was still going on. I'm guilty of the same thing. You know, I don't know our history the way that I should, as much as I try to, you know. I mean, you know, but we don't know our history the way that we should. Let me just add myself on into that equation. Some of us know a little more than others, but, you know, basically we don't, you know. We don't know our history. We just don't. And, you know, so, you know, then you got voter suppression stuff going on. Like I said earlier, Trump was trying to defund the post office. But thank God, I forget how they were able to get the money to keep but then, you know, all of this, you know, to, you know, right at this, you know, election, he wants to change the date of the election date. It's written in the date, November the 3rd, and you know, whatever it is, whatever it falls on every year, is written in the United States Constitution. Trump wants to change it until people, you know, can get out and vote without the coronavirus. It's such a, you know, it's craziness. What else? We have to talk about, we're going to have to look at some other things. I'm probably going to bring this topic back next week because, you know, again, like I said, with John Lewis and all of them, you know, because you remember now we had Johnson, Lyndon, the LBJ did the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He also did another Voting Rights Act of 1965 after the one we're talking about now, which is the Voting Rights Act of 1866. He had to come back in 1965 and write another one, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Right? Then John Lewis died 2 weeks ago fighting for another Voting Rights Act of 2019. Did y'all know that we have to renew voting rights, our voting rights? Let's see. What presidents are chosen, you don't say. Exactly. What'd you say? You think? Yeah, they're pre-chosen. Well, you know, like I said, when I want to understand something, sometimes I say, talk to me like I'm a 5-year-old. So I'm trying to cover the whole whoever may be listening today. Shirley says what? The date has never been changed in the history book. No, Trump want to change it, though. Trump is Donald Trump. I mean, it's just the crazy, I didn't know. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's craziness. But, yeah, John Lewis died. That bill is sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk right now, untended. Unattended, that John Lewis, the Voting Rights Act of 2019. Like I said, we used to have to renew our voting rights every 10 years. Now, this last time they did it, I think in 07, they extended it for 25 years. But literally, we have not been given full citizenship. Why? Because we have to renew our right to vote. If voting is the way that citizenship is determined and we have to keep renewing it, what does that mean? It's crazy. It's crazy. And it's sad that our in the black community, we scoff at the idea of voting, you know. Not only just the fact of people who bled and died for those rights, literally, if it were possible, they would try to take it away. Eric Holder and all of them. Eric Holder is not even attorney general anymore, and he still is in the fight. Because the voting privilege, it is a privilege. It is not a right. For everybody. We must understand this. And you know, lots of things going on. I'm gonna bring this back next week. We've got a lot more to cover, but I'm gonna cut it off right here. I wanna make sure that you guys are aware of some of the other little things that are going on as it relates to the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, when I say Black Lives Matter movement, I'm not talking about the specific organization Black Lives Matter, because there are some things that we need to look at with that. I'm talking about the movement itself and what's being done, you know, as it relates to the well-being of American black citizens. So you got a situation going on with Ice Cube. Ice Cube is writing something called, and they're working with other legislatures and economists and things like that. He's writing something called The Contract to Black America. Remember, Nixon did the contract with America back in the 70s. So we're going to do a thing, but we're going to look at that. T.I. is suing the Lords of London because of their participation in the transnational slave trade. Now, they had come out, I guess, at some point and apologized and acknowledged their involvement. And T.I. said, now give us some money. That's what I was saying. That, you know, reparations, they're going for it, honey. This cancel culture, they are not playing games. They are going for all of it. They have attached dollar amounts to everything that has ever happened to black people. Look, hold on. Lawyers of London. Yes, ma'am. T.I. is suing them. Matter of fact, I think their time is up. He might have filed a lawsuit. He gave them 10 days. To respond. He gave like 10 days to respond. So this is what's happening. I cannot stress enough. And you know, we're going to keep looking at this because, again, like I said, history is in circles. With those of us who know this scripture, Solomon talks about, where is that scripture at, Pastor Brown? That Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun. In Ecclesiastes somewhere? Tell me where that scripture is, Pastor Brown. Yeah. It's nothing new under the sun. It's cycles. It's cycles. Everything just goes in a circle. We want to know what's happening today. We need to know what happened in the past. Yep, because that is, you know, how it works. It repeats itself. So I thank you guys. Did everybody go over to, y'all got to go over to the YouTube channel and subscribe. I got about 20 subscribers so far. My goal is 1,000 subscribers this year. You know, I've been at this a while. The website, because I have the website of community resources and all of that stuff. So I didn't start, you know, I made a few videos in 2018. And then this year, I've just kind of, since the quarantine, I've started to put them on regularly, weekly. And so I'm trying to monetize the YouTube channel. And the way that I'm able to do that is being able to at least have 1,000 subscribers, and that will offset some of the cost of, you know, everything. So I appreciate it. I appreciate y'all coming in and listening and sharing your thoughts and sharing your knowledge, sharing your whatever, your presence, because I figure, you know, even in talking to a few people, every week, I love it because you have friends and family and all of that kind of stuff, and maybe we'll say something that will trigger us to, because that is the goal. Y'all got to look on those of you that are on Facebook, look at my about, because y'all, so that y'all will know what my vision is about this Community Advocate Network group. It's a network. That's why I didn't just name it the Deborah Mitchell Program. It's a network because, you know, I ain't got no dummies for friends. That's for sure. All of my, you know, everybody in my circle are straight bosses. We, you know. So it's very important that, you know, we share our knowledge because, there, I have a piece, you have a piece, you have a piece, and we can do some great work in the community just in providing the information to motivate people to get involved in their community, to motivate people to get politically active and things like that, or even just to become knowledgeable for their own well-being. Because that's my thing, is to improve and enhance the socioeconomic functioning of individuals, families, communities, and organizations that serve them. Check out my mission statement. I have it there on Facebook. Actually, I got it on YouTube, too. So thank you, guys. Is there anything else? Do we have any questions? Thank you so much, Keisha, for joining us. today, I'm going to be looking for you every week, too. That's one of my friends, one of my sisters. She's a sister. She's Keisha's family. We go back a good while, and we love each other, and we lost contact, and so she's here today, and I appreciate it. Matter of fact, Keisha, I got to get you on. I need to get you on here. I want to talk about the school system. She's a 21-year veteran of the Detroit public school system, and she could probably help quite a few parents with what they're going through with these school reopenings and all of that, and all of the nuances of things that's going on with that. But I thank you guys so much. I appreciate you. And make sure that, you know, that are subscribing to YouTube. If you want to support this platform, you can do it by PayPal or Cash App. And that's all I have for today. I'm going to come back next week probably and finish this subject matter so that we can get through the entire history, because it's important. We need to know it. We need to know it, especially coming up in the next election, that's in November for the presidential election. Again, you start ordering your ballots. Those of us that are in Michigan, 313-876-VOTE, 313-876-VOTE. That is how you can order your package, your absentee ballot package. It took me at least 2 months to get mine. I just got mine Friday, and the primary is Tuesday. And I know I ordered it at least 2, possibly 3 months ago. So, it's probably going to be a while to get it for November. So please, please, please order that stuff now. Do not risk your lives. Well, we got to vote, but, you know, just order the packages. The coronavirus is disproportionately impacting the Black community, and we have already lost I lost someone to coronavirus in March, a dear friend. And so, listen, we need to, you know, it's very important that you either do the mail-in voting or the absentee ballot. So that's it. Thank y'all so much. And I will see you guys, Lord's willing, on next week. Take care.